Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Tonight we're going to be dealing with the student loan and destroying student loan debt. We'll be dealing with the following questions. How do you eliminate student loan debt? How does these loans originate? What is the solution? Who benefits from student loans? Is it worth it to go to college? Is homeschooling a better option? These questions is what we're going to deal with this evening. I appreciate you all calling out. I appreciate your patience with us this evening because there were circumstances beyond my control. But tonight we are on the air, and we will be rolling with this thing. We're going to get it all out here and try to give you some solutions. Those of you who have student loan problems. Now, keep in mind that on August the 16th through 18th, we'll be right here in Jacksonville, Florida with the Morris Summit. We'll be dealing with all kind of situations that we're dealing with, including health and everything else. So make sure that you be here. We'll be coming back after this broadcast. We're dealing with your mortgages. We'll deal with the mortgages. And we're looking for a remedy in that. And we have something that you will be interested in. There's no doubt about it in my mind. I've looked over this thing over and over and over and over. There's no doubt in my mind that it's something that you can use to eliminate that mortgage debt, just like the situation that we have here as far as your student loan debt. But before we go forward, we're gonna deal with a backdrop, and then we're gonna go from here into student loan.
Production funding is provided by A. Reddix and Associates Health Information Resource Center, offering short-term training for long-term professional careers in medical coding. HIRCVA.net.
Discussing the issues and celebrating the successes of the African American community. This is Another View.
Hello, everyone.
Okay, this is too low. It seemed to me that somebody was in charge and didn't get out the men way so they can do what they were supposed to do. But let's take a look at this. That is going.
This spring, Governor Bobby Jindal pushed through major reforms of Louisiana's public school system.
But in spite of those aggressive changes, it appears that African...
I don't like that either. They go in.
For years, we've been told the surest way to make more money is to invest in yourself by getting a college degree.
But with the cost of college rising faster than inflation, is college really worth it? Or is it the big lie? Getting that college diploma is supposed to be the ticket to the good life. College after college has told students.
You know that college graduates earn $1 million more on average than those without a degree?
Politicians have been saying it too.
Graduates from four-year colleges earn nearly an estimated $1 million more.
However, that $1 million sounds like a lie to Rachel Purcell.
I didn't plan to go move back in with my mother.
This month, Rachel had to move out of her apartment because she couldn't pay the rent.
I feel like I have to sponge off of my family now.
She never dreamed this would happen after she graduated. Rachel had borrowed big to pay about $24,000 a year to attend Riviere College. She's still $85,000 in debt.
I was told that just to take out all the loans and get the degree, because when you graduate, you're going to be able to get that good job and pay them off no problem.
So she got a degree in human development. But for what? For 3 years, she's struggled to find a job.
Nothing.
The recession's made her search even tougher.
I just can't get a job in my field.
Instead, she took a low-level desk job with an insurance company doing work she says she could have done straight out of high school. So was going to college worth it?
I don't think it was, because now I have this huge amount of debt, and there's no way I'll be able to pay it off.
Many students told us that promise that a college education will get you a job.
I definitely feel like it was a scam.
Her college wrote us that Rachel's situation is unfortunate and that many of its graduates have launched successful careers. But a recent survey asked thousands of students at hundreds of colleges, would you go to your school again? About 40% said they would not. And yet we always hear, go to college.
We expect all our children not only to graduate from high school, but to graduate college and get a good paying job.
Everybody went to college.
Everybody went to college.
Chris Alfred followed the crowd at his high school and went to college and grad school. Now he owes more than $125,000. What did that get him?
I work at a call center and I make $10 an hour. And I feel like a loser.
Walter Rowland got a degree in meteorology, along with a debt load of $77,000.
College was a ripoff, and nothing against, you know, my college and my professors, but I was misinformed. You're led down this path of needing to go to college to get a good job. College diploma is the new high school diploma.
The bachelor's degree, it's America's most overrated product.
Dr. Marty Nemko is an education consultant and career counselor.
When your parents got a bachelor's degree, it was a big deal. Today, it's like a hunting license for a job. And
he's one of many who say there is some ugly statistics the education establishment doesn't like to talk about, like the truth behind that $1 million bonus.
There could be no more misleading statistic that I could possibly tell you about.
Misleading, Nemko says, because it includes super earners like these billionaires. They skew the average. And more importantly, many successful college kids would have been successful whether they went to college or not.
You could take the pool of college-bound students and you could lock them in a closet for 4 years and they're going to earn more money.
Because those are the kids who already tend to be harder working, more persistent.
And smarter.
But universities still throw around that $1 million number. Arizona State recently used it to justify a tuition hike.
$1 million is a lie.
Some people have misused the $1 million figure because they don't exactly understand it.
Sandy Baum speaks for the College Board. She admits the $1 million figure is wrong, but she still argues a bachelor's degree earns you maybe $500,000 more.
On average, people benefit much more from going to college.
But a recent book by Charles Murray argues that many college students just aren't able to handle the work, and graduation statistics seem to bear that out.
If you're in the bottom 40% of your high school class, you have a very small chance of graduating, even if you are given 8.5 years.
Amazingly, that's right. If you're in the bottom 40% of high school students, and today colleges recruit those kids, odds are you'll never graduate. While some experts say even some college helps, Nemko says to the bottom 40%, you probably shouldn't bother with college. You'll mainly get debt and disappointment.
The immoral thing about it is that the colleges do not disclose that.
Think twice before taking on debt for college, says personal finance guru Susie Orman.
I have to tell you, I don't think it's worth it.
Orman says college is a good thing for kids who have the grades to be doctors and lawyers, but others should reassess the value of a generic bachelor's degree.
The degree of a college determines how successful you are? I don't think so.
It's often smarter, she says, to acquire specific marketable skills at a community college, a technical school, or work as an apprentice for some business. That makes you more employable.
You got a question?
That's what these kids can do at this high school outside Houston. Here, students choose among dozens of technical education programs. The training qualifies them for real-world jobs. The school offers courses in EMT training, CSI courses, and more. Vocational school pays off for many. Electricians today make an average $48,000 a year. Plumbers make $47,000. That's more than the average American earns. But some people still look down on vocational school.
It's just a fact that a degree from a four-year college is considered first class. A vocational school degree is not.
We are a very status-driven society in America. We have a myth that prestigious careers are a key to the life well led, and it is often a myth.
More people need to realize that you don't have to get a four-year degree to be successful.
Steven Eilers went through an automotive program and then learned more by getting a paying job as an apprentice in a car repair center. Now he's earning even more, and he has zero student loan debt.
I get a lot of satisfaction knowing that if I fix something, it's fixed right.
And this past year, while hundreds of thousands of white-collar jobs vanished, the auto repair industry added jobs.
The friends that I know that have jobs, secure jobs, they never went to college.
And if Rachel could do it over again?
I probably would have gone to a trade school for hairdressing. That is about $11,000, and I'd probably be making better money.
I would much rather see a student graduate knowing that they can go out there, get a job, and not be crushed under the burden of a prestigious degree.
Okay, Moles, we're back. All right, there's one problem. I'm going to deal with one more problem. Then when we deal with that, then we're going to open this thing up for discussion. And if any of you who have a college degree, or if you thought about going to college, or if you tried to go and didn't make it, or if you just barely in there and making it, go ahead and raise your hand and let us know what's going on, and then we can try to deal with this situation this evening. I think that's fair. What about you? In my opinion, I think that if someone has a problem, they should get it out. We're going to look at one more situation because I'm a firm believer in a lot of people, they complain about not having the kind of shoes they like, and they have to wear something else until they get to the... Well, but what about the man that don't have no feet?
This video is my candid and frank talk about my current financial situation. So, I went to New York...
Now, people inside the United States of America... they understand that we have a problem inside this country. And we got to come to the conclusion of what to do about it. And if you are asking a question about what to do about something, that means that you should at least be thinking about a solution. Keep in mind that you ain't about to do nothing that's going to be worth anything without a plan. There have been people who dropped out of school. There have been people who were thrown out of school. But they was faced with this thing, okay, I've been thrown out. Now, what's interesting to me is the difference between the person who dropped out of school and the person who was kicked out of school and the person who went to school, got a good education, invest in college, whether their parents gave them some money or whatever, and then they find out they got the student loan debt, and they struggle all the way until they graduated and got out of there. It seemed to me that this person here is the same as the person over here who never got education in the first place. That tells me that something is wrong. I mean, I'm just looking at it that way. I could be wrong. Don't get me wrong. I could be wrong. But I'm looking at this thing, and it is one of the most interesting things that I have ever seen in my life with the college thing. I have talked to people with college degrees. They say, I have a bachelor's, I have a master's, I have this, that, and the other. They are the most interesting people that I've ever seen, because I've asked them a lot of common sense questions. And they have left me in total amazed wonderment with the answers. And I'm wondering, what is going on in there? How could you tell me something like that when you're supposed to have knowledge?
Now, assessing the value of a college education. It's an old question being debated anew in these difficult economic times. We taped our discussion yesterday and began with some background. It's the time of year for happy graduates and exhortations about the future.
You have been given the power through your education to pursue what you're good at.
For many new and recent grads entering a very tough labor market, these are also nervous times.
All right, babe, I love you.
As our Paul Solomon heard last winter from 2008 anthropology graduate David Cook, who's washing trash cans to pay his bills.
I just feel like I devoted years of my life and thousands of dollars into developing specialized skills that I'm not using.
Some recent studies support the anecdotal evidence. Rutgers University researchers reported that the median starting salary for a graduate of a four-year institution actually shrank in recent years, from $30,000 to $27,000. The same survey found that fewer than 60% of the 2010 graduating class held a job this past spring. Labor economist Andrew Sum.
Nearly half of all young college graduates, talking about BA holders under 25 and under, only half of them are working in a job that requires a college degree. The rest of them are working in jobs that either do not require a degree or not working at all.
Longer-term trends have also added to graduates' financial burdens, including, of course, the continuing rise in the cost of attending college and the accompanying rise of student debt. The average debt level for graduates has risen to more than $23,000, a jump from nearly $19,000 in 2004. But there is some solace for students. Over the long term, for example, a typical college graduate nets $500,000 more throughout his or her career than those with only a high school diploma. And amid the recession, the unemployment rate for college graduates was half that of those who just made it through high school. And we take a look now at some of these questions about the value of the four-year college experience with Michael Roth, president of Wesleyan University, Azar Nafisi, author of Reading Lolita in Tehran and Things I've Been Silent About. She's a professor of culture and literature at Johns Hopkins University. Peter Thiel is co-founder of PayPal, as well as an investor and philanthropist. He heads the Thiel Foundation, which awards fellowships to young entrepreneurs outside the traditional academic framework. And Richard Vedder is an economist at Ohio University and head of the Center for College Affordability and Productivity. Michael Roth, I'm going to start with you and put it very simply. Is college still a good investment?
College is a great investment, and it works so well for so many. America has built the greatest university sector in the world, and we have our challenges because that sector has changed dramatically because of changes in access, changes in the economy and culture. But what has made that sector great is we have given students an opportunity to discover what they want to do, what they're good at, get better at it, and then find a way to keep doing that work after college. We have to be transparent about the work we do. We have to evaluate it critically. But I think it's a big mistake to retreat from college education in the name of more specialized or technical or entrepreneurial fantasies, because that sector of research, exploration, and learning has served us well, and it can serve us well in the future.
All right. Peter Thiel, you've raised a warning over what you call an education bubble, which is on the analogy, I guess, of the housing bubble or the tech bubble. Explain what you mean and what you're worried about.
Yes. Well, we have a bubble in education. The costs have escalated by 300% adjusted for inflation since 1980. The quality has not gone up, so we're paying more and more for the same product. And it is something that is a bubble because it's intensely believed. It's taboo to question education and to ask whether people are really getting their money's worth. And it's very analogous to the housing bubble. People are told that you have to have an education. It's indispensable. It's always valuable. We have subprime education like we had subprime housing, but it probably is a system that's gotten to be quite rotten all the way up. I do not say that everyone should drop out of college or stop out, but I do not think that it is the right thing for everybody. I think there are people who are inventors, there are people who are entrepreneurs, and for them it makes sense to start contributing to society whenever they come up with the great ideas that will change the world. And all so right. I think we should respect the diversity that exists in our society and say that and realize that some people should go to college even when it's overpriced, and others should choose a different path earlier.
Zahra Nafisi, what do you think is the right way to think about this question of a return on a college education?
Well, there are some investments which are material, and you can count them in dollars and cents, but I think that they have a direct relationship to the quality of education. I mean, rather than just talking about investment in money terms, universities become sort of like canaries in the mine for a culture. They become the sort of standard of where a culture is going, the dynamism, the originality of this entrepreneurial experiences, mm-hmm. The fact that a society allows people to be original, to take risks, all of it comes for a passionate love of knowledge. And universities represent all the different areas and fields within a society, and the students and faculty come from all these fields. This is a community that represents the best that the society has to offer. And there was a mention of our universities being the best in the world. You notice that when certain countries like China reach a stage of economic and technological development, the first thing they do is they try to expand their knowledge, and they come to us to create liberal arts colleges.
Well, Richard Vedder, you're looking at it through an economic analysis. What does it tell you about pros and cons of today's education?
Well, I think Peter had it about right. There are a lot of people for whom college is not only a good investment, but probably a very satisfying experience for life. Remember also, college has a socialization function associated with it, as well as a pure learning function or even an investment function. But beyond that, but the reality is that there is a growing disconnect between what the labor market is telling us on the one hand and what college enrollments are on the other. By one way of measuring things using U.S. government Bureau of Labor Statistics data, as many as one out of three college graduates today are in jobs that previously or historically have been filled by people with lesser educations, jobs that do not require higher level learning skills, critical thinking skills, or writing skills, or anything of that nature.
Well, Michael Roth, respond to that. I mean, the argument is that something's out of whack between the academy and the market that we're sending these people into.
Well, I find it just puzzling that someone would argue that the fact that our workforce is more educated than it was 20 years ago is a bad thing. And I think the rhetoric of a bubble is just that. I think it's rhetoric and a poor analogy. Although I agree that college and universities are not for everyone, and there are lots of different kinds of colleges and universities in the United States. Wesleyan is a liberal arts school. we have a certain kind of curriculum that appeals to certain kinds of students. My eldest son went to a community college before he figured out what he was going to do in the next 2 years, and that was a great experience for him, and he needed it, and it worked well for him, and he found a way to navigate through that. So I am all in favor of the diversity of the American education system, but I'm skeptical of this language of a bubble. I think buyer beware. There are a lot of schools out there that aren't transparent about what they do, who have bad graduation rates. But I don't think it's in our interest as a democracy to say in advance who should go to college or what kind of job requires you to have an education that is in both about culture, citizenship, and about skill level.
Well, Peter Thiel, respond to that. Are you saying?
Well, I don't think it's all about the finances and the money. But when you are asking people to take on $250,000 of debt for a 4-year college, or $100,000 in debt to go to a culinary institute, and the costs have escalated like this, you have to start asking these hard questions. And it seems to me that the rhetoric that education is an absolute good. Sounds just like the rhetoric we heard about the housing bubble 6 years ago, where everyone needs shelter, everyone should buy a house. That may be true, but you should be very careful of the price. One of the ways in which it's worse than the housing situation is that you cannot get out of your school debts. If you make a mistake and you borrow money, you cannot get away from the house and have the bank, like you can get the bank to foreclose on the house. You're basically stuck with it. Even through bankruptcy, President Bush changed the laws in 2005 to basically make a school debt not expungible in bankruptcy. So it's the kind of mistake that if people make, and if you are wrong, and if it turns out that education is a bubble, you're putting a debt on the next generation that they will be spending decades paying off.
Another Zahra Nafisi, another piece of this, of course, is the particular values of, and we heard it raised a little, the arts and humanities versus engineering, business, where we funnel or what we emphasize for students?
Well, I think that they complement one another. That young innovator whom I saw on CNN this morning who is getting fellowship from Thiel Foundation to drop out of college and go and work on his invention, he needs to connect to the society. Human relations become very important. Look at the crisis we're facing today. It is not just a financial crisis. It's a crisis in vision. Look at the foreign policy. Foreign policy, what happened in Egypt, what happened in Iran, wasn't just about Twitter. It was about concrete situation on the ground of what was happening to those people. And where do you get the knowledge, genuine knowledge, to know about Egypt, about Iran, about China, about America? You get that from the universities. Where else do you go? I mean, this country was based on that vision. Its first president said that he had the dream of creating a national university on the capital because of the fact that humanities is about being human. Why do I want to make money? In order to enjoy and expand myself as a human being. My daughter is in debt right now because she's going to med school. That doesn't mean that she wants to give up med school. That means that there is something wrong with a system that cannot afford its children access to education. Not everybody should go to universities, but everybody should have the right and access to education. And education is not housing, by the way. You know, we cannot look at it in a utilitarian way.
Well, Richard Vedder, you can come back on this. Go ahead.
An interesting point was raised there. There is another dimension that hasn't been mentioned, and that is 40-45% of the students who enter traditional 4-year university or college education don't graduate. And I don't mean in 4 years, I mean in 6 years. So there's an enormous amount of risks being taken by a lot of students. And a lot of those risks relate to the fact that colleges and universities are often admitting students who they full well know have a limited probability of success, but they take them in anywhere. This is not the Wesleyans of the world. Wesleyan is a high-quality university, an elite private school. But many, many other schools have very, very high dropout rates, and that is another dimension of this that hasn't been picked up in all this talk about truth and beauty and having people learn about Egyptian civilization. I'm all for everyone learning about Egyptian civilization. But 42 out of 5 students who enter college don't make it through.
All right, but in the brief time we have left, Michael Roth, you start. What would you like to see happen? Just a brief prescription that you'd like for higher education now.
Well, I'd like to see the students who are going into higher education be better prepared so they could participate in the intellectual cross-training that higher education should provide, so that when they graduate, they have the skills to do many different things that are connected to what we need in this culture and society. And I think on that we probably all agree.
Peter Thiel?
I believe that we should not be denigrating work at the expense of credentialed learning. And we have this bimodal thing where you're either in the ivory tower or you're relegated to the coal mines. And I think that there is something about work that can be ennobling, that can be meaningful, and that can be a way for people to work in teams and contribute to our society, and we should not dismiss that.
I agree with him completely, and that is why I think that there should not be such a gap between work and education. They go hand in hand. In order to appreciate work, in order to allow innovation, you need education, you need knowledge, you need passion. It is like the blood in your veins. You don't see it, but without it, you can't live. So we need both of them. Why do we have to choose? That is one thing that I don't understand.
Well, because, I mean, we're in a time of choices, right?
And we need to reform the system of universities. We need to be more critical of what we have been doing and what we are doing. We need to update ourselves in order to allow people like Peter Thiel and his students and his young men and women to be able to expand the knowledge, expand the research.
And Richard Vedder, do you think we're in a time of choices?
I think we're in a period where we have to make choices. I think the choices are harder and harder to make. The cost of college is rising relative to the benefits of college. We haven't even talked about learning outcomes. There's a good bit of evidence that learning outcomes are stagnant or falling in this country at the very same time that costs are rising. I agree and totally with Peter. We need to open up opportunities for people to consider a variety of different options after high school, one of which is college, but there are many others. And maybe we need to think of new ways of certifying people to demonstrate competence for the what some people call the world of work or the world after college.
All right. Well, very big subject, and we will leave it there, but try to come back to these things. Richard Vedder, Azar Nafisi, Peter Thiel, Michael Roth, thank you all four very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Morris, I'm going to try this out and try to analyze this, make sure I got this right. Okay. I'm in junior high school, and I'm listening to the teacher. Okay, the teacher telling me a whole lot of stuff. A lot of the stuff I don't understand. It doesn't have anything to do with me. I can't identify with it because I belong to a specific culture and neighborhood, and all the people in it look like me. Now, but somebody said that I got to get this. But, okay, that's God. Right, I understand that. You say I got to have this in order to go to the next grade, but now I got a problem because God gave me a brain. And if he gave me a brain, then that means I feel like I should use it. And so therefore I have questions. You told me I need French, but I'm looking around. I don't see no French people. Can you tell me where I need it at? Could you help me out with the mathematics? Because you were telling me about 1 and 1 and 2 and 2 and all this right here. What about the stream mathematics that came out of ancient Kemet and the people's life? I you were dark skinned people, but everybody say the word Egypt, but I have never seen any illustrations of any jet black people. So I'm trying to figure out how this thing is going. And I know you say that I'm supposed to think this way and think that way, but some kind of hook or crook, I made it out of junior high school. Now I'm in high school, and I see the same kind of stuff going on, and I still got this brain that God has given me and in my skull, and I think I'm supposed to use it because otherwise, why would he have given it to me? But you keep stopping me from trying to use it, asking questions. in order to infiltrate it with something that you say is supposed to be in there. I don't understand it because all the people, all the education, all the information that you're telling me about comes from the brains of somebody that don't look like me. So I'm trying to figure out whether or not that something is wrong. If it's okay with you, I'm going to try to get in college because surely the answer lies in there. And could you please help me with that Egypt thing? Because you keep saying it, but you're telling me about this faraway place. Could you tell me what the people look like? Could you give me a clear description so I can see it and pass it right in the classroom so everybody else can see it? So because we may be able to work with something with that. Now, tell me about civics. Now, when we come to civics, you tell me about, Germany and then there's Bosnia and other. Well, wait a minute. Could you hold on a minute? Because I don't know nothing about that, but I do know about the different places here that where I went and the people look like me. Could you help me out with that right there? But now you're telling me that I'm not cooperating. There's something wrong with my brain. And you got to expel me from your college or university because I have brain damage. But I don't understand because I thought the Creator gave the brain to me. And I thought that I was in charge. But now you're telling me, even though the Creator, the self-sustainer of all life forces on the earth, gave this to me as a gift, but I'm not supposed to use it. I'm supposed to allow you to use it and put something in it, but I'm looking at you, and you don't look nothing like the woman that birthed me into the world, and you don't look nothing like the father that birthed me into the world, and I'm confused. And you're telling me that I'm running the risk of being kicked out of school? I got to go back and talk to the Creator, God, because he made a mistake. He supposed to have gave my brain to you for you to put in my head already programmed. I'm a bit confused. This thing, we got to sort this thing out here this evening. And, we're going to get to the bottom of it, and the main thing is we got to come up with a solution to the problem. We got to get to the bottom line.
For years, we've been told the surest way to make more money is to invest in yourself by getting a college degree. But with the cost of college rising faster than inflation, is college really worth it, or is it the big lie? Getting that college diploma is supposed to be the ticket to the good life. College after college has told students.
You know that college graduates earn $1 million more on average than those without a degree?
Politicians have been saying it too.
Graduates from four-year colleges earn nearly an estimated $1 million more.
However, that $1 million sounds like a lie to Rachel Purcell.
I didn't plan to go move back in with my mother.
This month, Rachel had to move out of her apartment because she couldn't pay the rent.
I feel like I have to sponge off of my family now.
She never dreamed this would happen after she graduated. Rachel had borrowed big to pay about $24,000 a year to attend Riviera College. She's still $85,000 in debt.
I was told that just to take out all the loans and get the degree because when you graduate, you're going to be able to get that good job and pay them off no problem.
So she got a degree in human development. But for what? For 3 years, she's struggled to find a job.
Nothing.
The recession's made her search even tougher.
I just can't get a job in my field.
Instead, she took a low-level desk job with an insurance company doing work she says she could have done straight out of high school. So was going to college worth it?
I don't think it was, because now I have this huge amount of debt, and there's no way I'll be able to pay it off.
Many students told us, that promise that a college education will get you a job?
I definitely feel like it was a scam.
Her college wrote us that Rachel's situation is unfortunate and that many of its graduates have launched successful careers. But a recent survey asked thousands of students at hundreds of colleges, would you go to your school again? About 40% said they would not. And yet we always hear, go to college.
We expect all our children not only to graduate from high school, but to graduate college and get a good paying job.
Everybody went to college.
Everybody went to college.
Chris Alfred followed the crowd at his high school and went to college and grad school. Now he owes more than $125,000. What did that get him?
I work at a call center and I make $10 an hour. And I feel like a loser.
Walter Rowland got a degree in meteorology, along with a debt load of $77,000.
College was a ripoff, and nothing against, you know, my college or my professors, but I was misinformed. You're led down this path of needing to go to college to get a good job. College diploma is the new high school diploma.
The bachelor's degree, it's America's most overrated product.
Dr. Marty Nemko is an education consultant and career counselor.
When your parents got a bachelor's degree, it was a big deal. Today, it's like a hunting license for a job. And
he's one of many who say there is some ugly statistics the education establishment doesn't like to talk about, like the truth behind that million-dollar bonus.
There could be no more misleading statistic that I could possibly tell you about.
Misleading, Nemko says, because it includes super earners like these billionaires. They skew the average. And more importantly, many successful college kids would have been successful whether they went to college or not.
You could take the pool of college-bound students and you could lock them in a closet for 4 years and they're going to earn more money.
Because those are the kids who already tend to be harder working, more persistent,
and smarter.
But universities still throw around that million-dollar number. Arizona State recently used it to justify a tuition hike.
$1 million is a lie.
Some people have misused the million-dollar figure because they don't exactly understand it.
Sandy Baum speaks for the College Board. She admits the million-dollar figure is wrong, but she still argues a bachelor's degree earns you maybe $500,000 more.
On average, people benefit much more from going to college.
But a recent book by Charles Murray argues that many college students just aren't able to handle the work, and graduation statistics seem to bear that out.
If you're in the bottom 40% of your high school class, you have a very small chance of graduating even if you are given 8.5 years.
Amazingly, that's right. If you're in the bottom 40% of high school students, and today colleges recruit those kids, odds are you'll never graduate. While some experts say even some college helps, Nemko says to the bottom 40%, you probably shouldn't bother with college. You'll mainly get debt and disappointment.
The immoral thing about it is that the colleges do not disclose that.
Think twice before taking on debt for college, says personal finance guru Susie Orman.
I have to tell you, I don't think it's worth it.
Orman says college is a good thing for kids who have the grades to be doctors and lawyers, but others should reassess the value of a generic bachelor's degree.
The degree of a college determines how successful you are? I don't think so.
It's often smarter, she says, to acquire specific marketable skills at a community college, a technical school, or work as an apprentice for some business. That makes you more employable.
You got a question?
That's what these kids can do at this high school outside Houston. Here, students choose among dozens of technical education programs. The training qualifies them for real-world jobs. The school offers courses in EMT training, CSI course, and more.
Gunshots into a windshield.
Vocational school pays off for many. Electricians today make an average $48,000 a year. Plumbers make $47,000. That's more than the average American earns. But some people still look down on vocational school.
It's just a fact that a degree from a four-year college is considered first class. A vocational school degree is not.
We are a very status-driven society in America. We have a myth that prestigious careers are a key to the life well led, and it is often a myth.
More people need to realize that you don't have to get a four-year degree to be successful.
Steven Eilers went through an automotive program and then learned more by getting a paying job as an apprentice in a car repair center. Now he's earning even more, and he has zero student loan debt.
I get a lot of satisfaction knowing that if I fix something, it's fixed right.
And this past year, while hundreds of thousands of white-collar jobs vanished, the auto repair industry added jobs.
The friends that I know that have jobs, secure jobs, they never went to college.
And if Rachel could do it over again?
I probably would have gone to a trade school for hairdressing. That is about $11,000, and I'd probably be making better money.
I would much rather see a student graduate knowing that they can go out there, get a job, and not be crushed under the burden of a prestigious degree.
Okay, Moses, we're back. Now, we got a caller in the queue with hand raised, and at this time I would encourage you, if you got questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand. But let me start off by saying that maybe I got this thing wrong. Maybe I wasn't born with a brain in my skull. Maybe it was given to somebody else, and I just thought I had it. And then later, it was given to me in some kind of way. So I want to put that out there because I thought maybe I might have had it wrong. Area code 904. Area code 904. Okay. Anyway, if you got a question, comment, go ahead and raise your hand. And we're going to deal with the student loan debt situation. Because this person went to school to get education. They were under the impression that if I get a good education, I can get a better job. Because he was under the impression that the educational system designed by a specific group, a nation of individuals, have designed something to be multicultural. We'll help the whole world with this. This has absolutely nothing to do with our own interests. Let's see what happened to him. Let's see whether the educational system made every effort to bail him out and help him, because after all, it was designed to benefit everybody because they're multicultural, right? So let's see.
This video is my candid and frank talk about my current financial situation. So I graduated from New York University with a bachelor's in social work. The way I was able to obtain this bachelor's degree was through college loans. The first year of my college I was able to afford that because through the help of my parents. My parents at the time moved to a different house, and while they bought a new house and moved there, they sold their old house. So the money they got from their old house, a good portion of that, about $30,000, they were able to use that money to be able to pay for my first year college. And I really said they didn't need to do that, but they helped me. So that first year was paid off like that. The next three years of college, of course, most of it I got it. I paid it through loans. I guess I wasn't that smart enough to think ahead, but I got loans through Citibank, and all our private loans. So the second year that I got the loan is about $30,000. The third year is $30,000. And the last year is about $36,000. And with interest accrued, my total amount that I owe to Citibank is about $105,000. So that's, you know, it's a huge amount of money to owe some organization, to owe a bank that amount of money, you know, amount of money that I could buy a house with, you know, if I go to where my parents are and they're in Tennessee, you know, I could find a house to live in with $100,000. So I pretty much bought a house, but instead of buying a house, I bought an education. And it's at the time, like, I majored in social work. So I was thinking, yeah, I won't be paid as much. Social work is not a very high-paying profession, especially the field that I want to go into, which is kind of related to community organizing, fighting poverty, helping homeless people, or, you know, helping the formerly incarcerated. So the people who are in prison but recently got out, helping them readjust to society. That's pretty much, that's the stuff that I want to do. That's the stuff I have passion for. Of course, it's not the stuff that pays that much, right? But my idea is that social work is such an integral part, such an important work. Social work is always needed in society. So I thought jobs will be needed. Getting a job as a social work major would be incredibly, I guess, easier than, because it's always needed. This job is high in demand. That was my mentality when I went to get this degree. I graduated, and something happened. You know, so I actually planned to kind of, you know, I didn't do so hot on establishing connections that I need to for, like, reference letters. So I didn't feel insecure about kind of applying for grad school to get a good master's degree. So I actually planned to get into the job market, get into the nonprofit field, and get some experience, like 1 or 2 or 3 years, not 1 year, 1 year would be too short, 2 or 3 years working in a nonprofit field, maybe as an administrative assistant, case management technician, anything that I can do as a bachelor's degree, get my hands dirty with the nonprofit work, improve myself, improve my skills, get those connections that will provide me with reference letters, then go to grad school, get my master's in social work, and become a social worker. That was my career plan. Didn't turn out that way. Didn't turn out that way because my parents had to move from California to Tennessee. My dad got so my dad is a pastor and my mom's a nurse. So that's so my dad was pretty much, my mom was a breadwinner in my house. She was the one who earned the money, and my dad was pretty much the one who took care of the house and raised me. So in my family, that's how the gender role dynamic worked, right? My dad was the caretaker, and my mom was the breadwinner. Anyway, what happened was my dad as a pastor had some trouble with his church. And he went to his denomination head, Assembly of Godhead, and division, and said, is there a church in the United States that would require assistance so I could become the pastor of that church? And just that time is when an opportunity arrived in Tennessee. There was a really troubled church. He was assigned to there. He went there. He went in January, and I was supposed to graduate in May. So this happened, like, right before I was to graduate. And then afterwards, in about, like, in March, my mom quit her job. Either quit or fired. I'm not really too sure on the story. But anyway, that happened. So she got her unemployment. So I think she was fired. I'm not too sure on the details anyway. So she had to go to Tennessee. So after I graduated, I went to California to be with my mom, but then we had to all move to Tennessee. So our entire family moved to Tennessee. My mom is out of work, and my dad is still trying to get himself established in this really struggling church, which has become not only bankrupt, but is in, the previous pastor kind of made the church bankrupt and ran away. That's what happened. So that's the kind of situation he's in. And my dad, in order to help the church, has agreed to accept a salary that is much lower than what he's supposed to be getting. In fact, I think the first 2 months he didn't get any pay at all. I'm not really sure what happened, but that was the case. The church is in a horrible financial situation. It's in a horrible, actually, a lot of the church members left because of the political issues that happened. So I actually had to kind of put my life on hold to help my parents for 4 months. And I'm given it, so after I graduate college, Citibank gives me about 6 months grace period, right? That's the time I should spend to find a job to be able to afford the rent, the loan payments that I need to make. 6 months, pretty much. But I ended up spending about 4 months helping my parents out. So already that set me back a lot. When I came back to New York in my apartment, the problem was it was a really bad time for job searching. It's the end of the, it's like the holiday season, so not a lot of places are hiring, and the only opportunity I got was as a canvasser for Green Roots campaign, and I didn't make the staff. So they have this fundraising or canvassing, and it's very tough in a way because you have to meet a quota. You have to meet a fundraising quota, and I didn't meet the quota to make the team. Although I did raise a good amount of money, I wasn't able to meet the requirement to make the staff. So I didn't make the staff, but I did earn about $300 through that experience. So that's the state I'm in. I go back to Tennessee for a month just to request their help, right? So I go there, I help my parents out, and I'm able to get a lot of money through the church members there. It's very, very generous and kind. So I came back with job search in mind, and that's when I came back is when my grace period was kind of over. So I'm hit with the loan payment. I have to make $868 a month to Citibank. Of course, I can't make it. I don't have a job. My mom doesn't have a job. My dad makes barely $2,000 on his salary as a pastor. So that's the situation I've been in, and it's been hard finding a job until I eventually found a job, and I'm currently employed as a tutor in a nonprofit company called Champion Learning Center. So I'm currently working as a tutor, but this company is closing for the summer, actually. So it closes in the summer, and it starts up again in September. So I'm in the process of being unemployed, about to be unemployed again, and I have to be job searching again. In the meanwhile, my loan situation is as follows. So I have to make $868 a month to Citibank, but currently my delinquent amount, which is the money I haven't been able to pay back, and it's been accruing, is $1,600. The balance is at about $1,600, and it's about 60 days late. So for 60 days, I haven't been able to pay this amount that I'm supposed to be paying them. And so I'm getting late fees, and my credit score is probably getting, totally killed. And my co-signers are my parents, and they're not in the financial situation to be able to help me either. So this is the financial rut I'm in. I just wanted to share that with you. It's a pretty desperate situation, especially in the coming months, because by June, it's pretty much guaranteed that I will have to move to a new place because my roommates will, one of my roommates is not going to live with us. And the other roommate, she's not sure whether she'll live with me or by herself. So I know for sure that by June, I have to move. And moving process is going to cost a lot of money. Probably either cost a lot of money or just very unstable. So that's my situation. And I get collection calls from Citibank like, very, very frequently, sometimes like 3 times a day, sometimes 4 times a day. They're very nice people. You know, when I do answer the phone, I talk to them, I explain my situation. They're very understanding. They're very kind and considerate. It's just really great talking with them, but it's at the time, it's so guilt-ridding because having to owe someone this much money and not being able to pay them back makes me feel like a thief. But there's nothing I can do right now. You know, right now, I'm to pay my living expenses is such a higher priority than paying, loan payments. And I would love to, but it's kind of hard. So that's my situation that I wanted to share.
All right, folks, I'm back. Let me go back up here and open up these phone lines. Area code 904.
Hey there.
Hello. Who am I speaking to?
Hi, this is Sharon Hunter Bay, Jacksonville, Florida.
Hey, Sister Bay. What's going on?
Well, I just wanted to say from my perspective, the college education is just, as that man said, a biggest lie to rip off that you ever want to get yourself wrapped
up.
Wait a minute now,
because these people gave you a degree, did they or did they
not?
Yeah,
they gave me several of them.
All
right. And they're worthless.
Wait a minute,
no. I wish I could give them back.
No, come on now, because there are other brothers and sisters out there that have degrees too. What kind of degrees do you have?
I have two bachelor's degrees. I have a bachelor's degree in political science, and I have a bachelor's degree in human resource management. And I have a master's degree in education. And right now, presently, I'm working at a job that I could have went straight out of high school and worked and make the same amount that I'm working now instead of being $30-something dollars in debt for student loans right now. And mind you, I've been paying these student loans for over 20 years now, and I still owe over $30,000.
Oh, my goodness. You know what? You may be just an isolated situation.
I doubt it. I doubt that very seriously because I know people that's been working in the same job that I am that also have college degrees. So it's not isolated to one person. It's a bunch of them.
All right, well, let me ask you this. Now, in your opinion, just put the degrees down for a minute. And let's look at this. In your opinion, do you think the Creator gave you a brain?
Yes.
All right. And if he gave you a brain, do you think that it was when you got old enough to use it for yourself? Do you think that according to his instructions, were you supposed to allow somebody else to take control of it?
No.
Okay.
No, it was a bad decision. If I had to do it all over again, I wouldn't even go that route, nowhere near college to do anything. I'm not saying that all education is bad. I would probably go a different route. I'd rather go a different route now. I would probably just maybe take me some business courses on how to open up your own business and things of that nature and how to finance it and things of that nature. That's the route I would go instead of even going through any college because it's just unnecessary. Hello? Hello? Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Okay, I'm back now. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right, now, did you hear the last question?
No, I didn't get the last question.
The last question was, what do you think that you ought to do now? Now that we understand that the, the Creator has given us this brain, and that each one of us is given talents that we can do that nobody else can do on the planet. What do you think we ought to do? You think we ought to get more education? Do you think we are, in spite of the education that you already have, do you think we need to attach common sense to it?
Definitely common sense. The only thing that I'm doing now, my solution is to find a way to get out of it. And so far I've managed to get rid of a wage garnishment because of student loans, and I've managed to get rid of the lien that the IRS had on me. And my next move is to eliminate it totally.
All right. Well, you seem to be on your way. Now, wait a minute. Did your college degree show you how to do that?
No, didn't need it for that. It has provided absolutely no use to me whatsoever. None of them. I wish I could get them back. And just like the
digital, no.
Could have these on back now.
No, because. They gave you that, and now that they have given you that, that means something. That means that in America, if you go into a building or whatever, you should shout and declare that I have 2 master's degrees, and that's going to do something.
Right. They're going to put you right in the line with people that's making $10 an hour.
Okay. We're going to get to the bottom of this right here. But hold on. Let me open up this other line over here.
Okay.
Area code 317. 317.
Yeah, I'm here. How you doing, Brother Clark?
Come on, man. I'm fine, bro. Let me know about it.
I just stayed on in my late 20s. I went to college right outside of high school. And like from day one, I know they do this with a lot of minorities. I noticed when I was in like junior high, my GPA was real high. But you know how you get when you're in junior, senior year. I ain't had that many classes. I had like 2 classes my senior year. So I kind of slacked off with my GPA. Mm-hmm. So when I got to college, they made me take Gen Ed instead of going into either my minor or just go ahead on to my major. You had to be a certain GPA. I notice a lot of people, a lot of minorities, I would say I'm not trying to cancel out, say it's racial, nothing like that, but they try to steer you towards taking general education classes your first year as a freshman. Well, for me, I mean, it's like high school, you know what I mean? Now, I had a grant to go, but I stayed on campus, so I had to pay for that. And I wound up peeping the game out the first semester, and I quit. I went half. Matter of fact, I went half semester, and I left. And I was going to transfer, but I was like, nah, I'm not even going back. First of all, I wasn't focused, and I knew they were going to try to drag me a couple years taking general education classes. I'm like, I don't even need this stuff. It's reiterating what I learned in high school, you know what I mean? So it was a waste of money I was actually paying. Mm-hmm. But I only like got in debt like $1,500, and that's all I peeped the game out from day one. Like, I'm cool. I don't need this right here. And especially I was going to school for a trade. Now, people, like, get master's degrees in different fields and stuff like that. I mean, I take it from learning what major is and all that stuff and how they took the science that we taught them and then implemented and watered it down, implemented in from your child all the way up to your adulthood. It's not with degrees of knowledge, but it's not knowledge, really. It's not true knowledge and wisdom. But that's how they equate it. You know, what they teach it to us, what they want us to learn, you know what I mean? So it's basically a double-edged sword. But, and as far as, I got a lot of people I went to school with though, are totally in debt. Like, they got masters and they got bachelor's degrees, but they are in debt, like, close to $200,000. You know, I mean, they got nice cars, and you know what I mean? They got a nice house or whatever like that, but that debt hanging over their head, like, something crazy. And doesn't that, like, increase your credit score? Because I know when I got that student loan, like, my credit score went almost up to 700. I started getting credit cards and all that stuff. I only got one, but I had so many credit card applications while I was in college. It didn't make no sense. So is that, like, a a trap, because it seems like, because I don't get none now.
All right. Okay. Okay. Well, wait a minute. Let's see if you can answer that question for me. All right. You got all of this. All right. Now, where we at now?
I was thinking about paying it off. I come up.
No,
where I'm at right now?
Yeah. They gave you all these credit cards, all the every time they run it, putting you in there. Your credit code went way up. Now,
right, I only took one of them, though.
You're really busting now. Right?
Mm-hmm. That's old. Like that. I took one credit card. I maxed it off, but I paid it off years ago. Mm-hmm. But my student loan, I pay half the loan and then just like defer it 10 years. Like, 10 years is up now. And I'm either going to pay it off, I'm going to wind up going ahead and pay it off. It's like $700. I got the money, but really what I wanted to do, just learning in and out how this system works. I'm not going to say I want to play with it, but I'm in a position that I can, because I could just go ahead and if all else fails, I could just go ahead and pay it off. But this is like I'm debating, do I want to – is this something that I want to challenge information that I've been learning as far as the debt and all that, and it really don't exist because it's in the third-party debt collection now from my original lender. And I just been dragged.
And what's the total amount that you owe on these contracts?
As far as getting rid of it, I really want to challenge that. Because, I can pay it off, but because it's not a substantial amount. You know, it's $100,000. So, like, I got the money to pay it off, but I really want to use the information just to see for myself. Because I heard a lot of stories of people. I don't know nobody that actually did this with the information as far as student loans. Because I know they ruthless with student loans because they go as far as with the IRS and all that stuff. I mean, they don't do that for other things, but they do it for student loans. But I don't think they would do it for $700 and something. You know, so I'm like willing to challenge with the information. So basically, I really asked you that question. Should I challenge them as far as proving the debt, which and they don't have a contract because of the third-party entity
now?
No,
I don't recommend that. What I recommend is to eliminate. If you got the debt, get rid of it. You don't ain't no challenge in nothing. You just get rid of it and cancel contracts. Because I told you 1,000 times that it's all on contracts.
Right.
That's my recommendation. Get.
Okay. That's all I wanted to say. I just wanted to chime in on that.
Okay, Mose, I'm back. Now, what I'm trying to, actually, I need y'all to hold on a moment because we're having a technical problem here. And what we're going to do is we're going to contact the company tomorrow because they chopped this up real, real bad. They owe us some money. Now we're going to give us two.
Play me some Bobby Seas or some Marvin Gaye. I'm not gonna sit around all night long. I'm gonna dance until the morning comes. I'm gonna let all of my troubles go. It's 2 a.m. in the morning and I'm ready for more.
Life, wisdom. I'm Psyche Truth correspondent Karina Rachel, and today on the Truth Talks, I'm continuing my conversation with Dr. John Breeding. Today we're talking about the public school system, and in this video, specifically, the differences between public school and homeschooling. So I want to start by asking you if you attended public school or if you were homeschooled. So leave me a comment and let me know. Thank you so much for joining me today. And I guess let's go ahead and start. I know in a previous video from your Leaving Home series, you discussed homeschooling and the public school system. So can you maybe elaborate on just some of the differences between those two different education systems and maybe the benefits and problems with each one?
Well, I'm a big fan of homeschooling. I think that, I'm a big fan of homeschooling, and I'm a big fan of a specific kind of homeschooling, I guess, you know, because really homeschooling just really means home living, right? But and it means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. It can be anything from taking a standard public school curriculum and then just bringing it home and doing it at home, you know, because of whatever reason. A lot of times because you want to protect your child from the insidious influences of the schools or whatever, but you haven't really thought about the curriculum and the structure. You know, you just want to do it at home, you know, or it could be, you know, buying a specific curriculum, you know, that's a little different because you think it's a little better, but still you're going to implement it and make sure the child does it, you know. And to all the way to this other extreme, which is called unschooling typically. It was the approach favored by another one of my favorite educators, John Holt, who wrote How Children Learn and Why Children Fail. And John Holt talked about unschooling, you know, which is this other extreme in which you're not schooling a child in the sense of implementing a thing where you're going to funnel somehow this education into this child, you know, and make them do it the way that you think they need to do it. Instead, you're going to deliberately undo that and allow the child to follow their own lead, right? And then you're a resource, basically, you know. So that's called home living, and that's called trusting that you don't have to make children learn. You don't have to motivate children to learn, you know. You don't have to make children responsible, you know. You just have to recognize that those qualities already exist, and then all you do is allow them to unfold and maybe resource them appropriately at times, right? You know. And I like it.
Yeah, and I think that's such a huge point that you made there, and you made this in the previous video as well, that children innately have this motivation to want to learn. They are interested in everything. I mean, and you think about a baby, just every single thing that they see, they're just enamored with. So yeah, there is this idea that you have to school the child, you have to teach them and, you know, kind of force them to learn. But that really does kind of go against what is really quite natural of the child, which is lots of interests, lots of questions, you know, constantly wondering about new things. So this idea that maybe you could encourage that and take advantage of that rather than kind of, you know, battling that down and hushing that and
children
challenging
are born
that.
To learn. Children in the first 3 years of life, every child learns more than anybody that we might call a genius, you know, in later life, you know. Mm-hmm. And children typically go into school, you know, excited and curious and that, you know, it's not amazing that that continues. What's amazing is that large numbers of children by a pretty early age learn to hate school and to be bored with it and to be apathetic with it. And get to the point where, for example, you know, even the people who are successful in school, meaning they graduate from high school and they go to college and they enter my classes at college, you know, they're conditioned in this place of passivity. And so it's called, what's going to be on the test? What do you want me to learn? What do you want to study? And it's called, you go, what's up, class? What do you want to talk about today? What do you want to study? And it's like, people who are conditioned that way, they're just like that, you know. And or check this out and think about that and then bring up your questions next time. And it's like that, right? And that's evidence of being conditioned towards this intellectual and emotional dependency, toward this passivity, toward I'm studying this because I have to get a job or because you want me to and this is the way to do it, as opposed to this is what I want to know, this is what I want to learn because this is what I'm expressing in my life right now and this is where I want to go. It's a very, very different energy and expression.
So you mentioned that you are in favor of homeschooling, but a very specific type of homeschooling. Can you maybe go into a little bit more detail about, you know, the particular aspects of homeschooling that you think are most important?
Well, it's not even so much a particular type. It's more an attitude and approach. You know, I'm not really down with the taking the curriculum and imposing it on the child, and this is the way to learn, and I'll tell you if you got it right. You know, mm-hmm. What I'm saying is that it's a child-centered deal. It's called, what do you want to study? What do you want to learn? What are you interested in right now? Or just watching and then facilitating that. And if a child is interested in worms and dirt, you know, then you provide experiences of worms and dirt, you know, mm-hmm. and maybe you start a worm farm and figure out how to do that, you know, or maybe you take a trip, you know, to East Texas and get into the big thicket and you get into the really muck and find all the creatures there and dig into it and stuff like that. You know, it's like you're a resource, you know, who's facilitating, you know, something at a level that the young person is at. And but the idea is that all the specifics, you know, called the ABCs, you know, the reading, writing, arithmetic, whatever the curriculum says you're supposed to learn, those things get learned when you need them. You know, and so be prepared to support that and facilitate that, but that's different than in imposing this on it. So I like homeschooling, you know, but different things work for different young people, you know, and
right.
And the thing is to trust in the child and trust in their inherent intelligence and zest and curiosity for learning, and just do whatever you can to protect against the suppression of that.
So in terms of how this type of schooling, this being forced to study things that you don't want to study, and we talked about your self-determinism or your self-determination, and how, you know, schooling in this kind of forced way really kind of dampens that. How does that affect someone's critical thinking skills later on? You know, what is really the long-term effect of children in America going through this kind of public education system?
Well, one thing that I talk about is doing the best you can to protect your child from shame, you know, because what happens is when you want to do this and somebody else is telling you to do this, you know, when you are not happy with or not cooperating with or not interested in or don't give the right answer or whatever, it's something's wrong. It feels wrong and something's wrong, right? You know? And so basically it's like either the child is wrong or the adults are wrong and the structure's wrong, right? But there's not a lot of attitude and space called the structure's wrong, you know. It's called the child's having a hard time, something's wrong with that child. And the way it works nowadays is they go into the special education system, you know, and they're learning disabled, dyslexic, attention deficit disorder, et cetera, emotionally disturbed, you know. Mm-hmm. And so all these labels and judgments, you know, that there's something wrong with you because you're having a hard time in this system, right? And so if your child is in that system, you know, I think it's your responsibility to do what you can to protect your child from taking that on. There's something wrong with me because it's inevitable, right? And that's the biggest thing, because what that leads to is a feeling something's wrong with me, and then it leads towards a withdrawal and a shutting down or an anger and an acting out. But in any event, it leads to all kinds of problems. And the focus is no longer on really thinking and learning. You know, it's more on protecting myself and resisting the energy that's attempting to control me, you know. So if nothing else, you've got to have some way of being in a relationship with your child that says, you know, you're doing great, and, you know, this is the best system we can figure out right now and that we've got you in, but it's got some problems, and it's not that you're the problem, but you and I together are smart, and we can figure out how to get through this, and then it's an ongoing unfoldment. My book, The Wildest Colts Make the Best Horses, I talk about that a lot.
And I'm just kind of getting this idea of, you know, thinking about the competition of grades and the being constantly, if the teacher tells you you're wrong, then you're wrong. And if you're, like you said, acting up in class, or you're not doing this, or you can't sit still,
it really does create this entire attitude of feeling like what's wrong with me and how am I not fitting in, or how, you know, what am I doing wrong, or is my behavior not okay? And definitely as we grow up, we see that we do kind of hold on to this waiting for an authority figure to tell us we're okay. And if an authority figure or even a TV commercial tells us there might be something wrong with the way we're acting, we immediately, you know, rush to our doctor. And it just has kind of created this attitude of, yeah, feeling like what's wrong with me, rather than focusing on that we do each have individual things to offer. And as you mentioned, different ways that we learn and optimal ways that we...
Most people don't homeschool, obviously, right? But maybe 1% do, maybe 2%, right? And but the nice thing about embracing the possibility of homeschooling, right, is that even if you don't do it, not only embracing the possibility, but embracing the reality that your child will do well whether they go to school or not. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like it's very liberating, right? You know, because people feel very trapped and afraid that their child is going to get kicked out and they're going to have problems, and if they don't go to school, they're going to be a total failure in life, right? So it's an incredible thing to just be relaxed about that and know that, you know, you can walk away. Your child is going to be fine. If that seems like the best thing for your child, and you figure you can work it without your child getting crushed or whatever, then that's fine. But that gives you, then you can go in there and actually have some more power and authority and not be intimidated and insist that things be a certain way. But you can be relaxed about it, you know, and ultimately you can know that if you walk away for a while, and your child learns in other things, they'll be fine, and they can go back to school if they want to. But it's basically trusting in the child and finding that place of being relaxed and confident,
right?
You know, as opposed to this attitude of the only way your child is going to be okay is if you turn them over to...
Amos, going directly into the month of July, for those of you who have problems with your mortgage, you got student loan debt, you got that child support hanging on it, we're going to cancel those contracts. And for those of you who are trying to do that, before you do anything, call me at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Now, if you just want the most powerful archives in America, go right there to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. That's www.newfreehelpgroup.com. And give me a call to Hucker Amana L. Bay at 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we'll get you some aid on that thing, okay? All right.
The jungle is a dark street at night, where wild animals lay low, out of sight. With implements of steel and menacing curses, they endeavor to separate the rich from their purses. The jungle has winners and losers, grinners and sobbers. It's a place where grown men play, cops and robbers. The name of the game is hide and seek, where the mean and the strong devour the weak. Where panther and python show their fangs. Oh no, they're not wild animals. They're street gangs.
That's the Livingston, I presume. Look like cat, I'll do that soon. That's the Livingston, I presume. Look like cat, I'll do that soon. That's the Livingston, I presume.
Now this jungle is a street of walls, where people listen when money calls. Computer addicts trying to win, while angry ulcers attack from within. Where cougars and impala stalk the streets, louder voice. Automated, animated, regulated clones bending the knee to Mr. Dow and Mr. Jones. Of the milk of human kindness, no one cares. Just the constant struggle of the bull and the bear.
Is my name. The chain on Clifton Lane. Tarzan Jackson kills my name. With the chain on Clifton Lane. Tarzan Jackson kills my name. With the chain on Clifton Lane. Tarzan Jackson kills my name. With the chain on Clifton Lane.
Now I gotta sleep a terrible night.
nothing you learn from the time of your arrival. The only game in town is the one called survival. This jungle is like a great big pinball machine, where some come to see, some come to be seen. Some love it, some hate it, and there's some in between. Just go with the bunch, learn to roll with the punch. This jungle is a fun-filled safari, a la Patel, or Atari. You've got to get in it if you really want to win it. But once you begin it, there's never a dull minute. So run through the jungle and never look back. Fly to your dreams, don't get off the track. Run! But beware, beware. It's a jungle out there.
Don't get moved, we're back.
Now, the way I see it is, based on what I know, we got a tremendous amount of people who have of African descent who have bought into going to school, get a good education, to get a good job. That was a standard thing all the way across the board. Okay, and we were led to believe that where you can go over here, and I mean it, because the game, the game went on a long time. But we have people who appear to have arrived of African descent inside the United States who are now officially stymied, burdened with debt. They may have nice-looking home, nice-looking car, but that is not the extent of your life. You have a nation that is in shambles. So that means that something was wrong in the beginning. But we cannot be investing any time in the world about all of that. We need to know where we are now and what we should be doing now. In my opinion,
is of course for you, but I would like you to direct the answer directly to the young people that are gathered here today, and it has to do with the surplus population that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
All right, by the middle of the next century, the world population will double. There's an increased mechanization of labor. There's also going to be a shortage of water. All right?
Mm-hmm.
This will inevitably bring about, also, to add that, there's also a shrinking in the world's grain production is not keeping up. So when you have such a large group of people, I'm talking about African people globally,
mm-hmm.
that are going to be basically, who cannot defend themselves, who can't defend themselves, nor find a place within the economic niche in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I think that these children are going to have to be taught that they're going to have to struggle for their position in the world.
Yes.
That there's going to be increased conflict, not less.
Right. Okay. I thank you for bringing that up. It's very, very, a very, very important question and a very, very important issue. Because, of course, when I was talking about the crisis in white supremacy and the economic crisis, I wanted to get across the point that crisis also represents opportunity. We should not look at then those things that I listed
and assume that that means we should give up. What I, as I think Richard Nixon, someone says, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. And in a sense, when I read the kinds of things that I read and I talk about the kind of things that I talk about, I'm talking to the tough. And so if you're truly tough, then this should be an invigorating message. It's not a message to depress you, but to really motivate you to say, hey, if the world's resources are getting smaller or are shrinking, if there's increasing scarcity, then it is time for me, and I'm speaking in terms of our people, to see to it that we get an appropriate share of those resources. To a great extent, when we talk about racism and we talk about the status quo, to a great extent, the status quo is built on the idea that resources are not limited less, and therefore some group tries to organize not only itself, but other groups, so that it can get its share or more than its share of the limited resources. And as we look then and see these resources becoming more and more scarce, our job opportunities become more and more scarce, we have to become very tough-minded and decide that we are not going to be the people with the short on the short end of the stick. It's very important for you to notice, to learn to read business statistics, and to learn to read employment statistics. Why, for instance, do you get the statement that the economic system grew at a rate of 1.6? You know, you hear that often. Or the economy grew at 1.8. Well, what does that really mean? What it really means is that if you have a growing population, the economy has to grow as fast or faster in order for the new people coming into the job markets to have jobs available to them. An economy that is not growing or that is going too slow, that it is not creating new jobs or not creating enough new jobs, it means at some point the population and the number of people who may even be qualified for jobs will outnumber the number of jobs available. And as I told you earlier, this creates severe problems. This means that often a nation, which may at one point had peaceful relationships between ethnic groups, and may at one point had law and order, may, because now each group is struggling to be the one to get the lion's share of the jobs because there are not enough jobs going around, that means that nation then may start becoming disorganized. That means crime increases, racism may increase, just general social order can change. So this is the reason why you have to recognize that this dream that black folk and white folk are going to live together one day, and that, you know, all of us are going to, you know, black and Chinese and Japanese, everybody's going to have a wonderful time, that is based on an assumption. It is based on the assumption that the U.S. economy will continue to grow at such a rate that it will have enough jobs and opportunity available for all people. If it grew at that rate, then you could possibly have that dream come true. But if it does not grow at that rate, that means that you got a lot of people competing for scarce resources. We are now at that stage in this country. We're not only at that stage in this country, we are reaching that stage in the world. The economy in Africa, for instance, on the whole, is only growing at about 1.2%. And yet, its population is growing between 3 and 4%. That means the number of people that are being born, the number of people who say theoretically may be trained for new jobs, is three times the number of jobs available. That is a scenario for economic disaster. When you compare that to the amount of water available, and when you compare that to the amount of food that is available, which is of course related to water and other things, you can begin to see that Africa will be beset with tremendous political and economic problems as its population outstrips its resources and its growth. The United States, if Clinton does not create new jobs, does not to some degree reindustrialize this country will also be facing a similar situation. And there's only a couple of solutions to this problem, and that is either you get used to living in chaos and a tremendous amount of ethnic conflicts and fights, or some ethnic group is going to have to pay the price and disappear. Or some ethnic group is going to have to increase its productivity and growth such that it can feed its population. And that means that the African nations are going to have to speed up their economic development and their growth, learn new scientific methods and do other things in order to feed their population and to increase the quality of life. But, ladies and gentlemen, the same thing is true about Africans in America.
Okay. That was interesting. I hope you got it, and we can put this toward a connection to the educational system inside of America. In my opinion, that's the bottom line. First, we have to understand that people of African descent, you're denationalized people. You've been denationalized at birth. You've been labeled as Negro, you've been labeled as colored, you've been labeled as black, and all these things. Everybody got a nationality but you. But in my opinion, at this late hour, based on everything that I've told you and presented to you, what are you going to do about it? I highly recommend that you go back and listen to previous broadcasts that I put up. And I'm confident that you will come to a solution. As far as your debt is concerned, your student loans, go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. http://www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Now, when you get there, it's time to pick up the phone because they're going to tell you right there. Call Tasha first before you do anything so that we can do this, get this right, explain everything to you, and get it right before you do anything. You can't beat that. You have someone to talk to in order to get it right. Now, I've presented to you this evening some stuff, and there's a whole lot of ton of stuff that we're supposed to present, but we've been fighting with the people who we paid to air this broadcast with. And their system has really messed us up. We're going to deal with that first thing in the morning. However, we're going to be coming back, and we're going to be dealing with the mortgage situation later. And when you see that pop up, you know we own. It'll be coming right behind this broadcast here. Okay? Well, anyway, we got down to the bottom of the hour. All the time has been split up, used up, messed up, any kind of way to block you from getting this information. But nevertheless, we did the best we could, and we're going to see what we can do with that first thing in the morning. We're going to call them, and I'll let them know that we paid you, you screwed us. So we're going to move on now. I've been your host, Haga Omane Elbe. Until next time, I need you all to have a good evening, okay? And don't forget on August the 16th, the Morris Summit, right here in Jacksonville, Florida, 16th through the 18th. Get with us. Come on down here. Y'all have a good time. And we will be right here waiting on you. Okay? Y'all have a good evening. Mm-hmm.
teaching.